Hello and welcome into another episode of Podcast 63. It's season 4, episode 28. And unfortunately, this is going to be the last episode that we talk about Loyola basketball on the court for a little while. This is going to be the episode we talk about our March Madness game. Lou and I are going to talk about our experience being in Pittsburgh and driving for 14 hours and 48 hours. Just talking a little bit about seeing some fans, seeing some people, the game as well, of course, the game, maybe some of the effects of it as well and all that kind of stuff. So, Lou, I don't know what to ask other than how you're feeling, but, tough weekend, but I had a lot of fun and I hope you did too.
Yeah, no, absolutely. I think it was a little bittersweet just because we wanted to go a little bit further in, of course. I think everyone's goal is the championship, but also I think just with the difference maker this team has done toward the end of the season, we wanted a little bit more. But no matter what, it was a great season so far, and I can't wait to talk about the weekend and also the impact I think just getting to this stage leads toward other seasons. Especially the one coming up. But again, really excited to talk about the game because there was a lot of insights, but a lot of impact for future seasons.
Yes, there was. So we'll talk about all that. So stick with us and don't forget, always remember, go Blurs.
He jumps, he passes out to Hunter. Hunter shoots off the rim. Brown gets it, scores. It's over. It's over. We won. We won the ball game. Loyola won the ball game. Oh, we won. 60-58.
And we are back. So let's start at the beginning and start about how we. I don't think we covered too much on the last episode about how
the
we were
getting to go.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, actually, you know what? I think it's an interesting kind of just insight to a lot of people. I think had this trouble. So one, we knew when we recorded on Monday where we were playing, right? But we didn't know how we were going to get tickets or if we were getting tickets, right? So I think a big thing Buck and I were waiting for was we're both season ticket holders, and like many of our listeners, I'd say, we're waiting for that great email saying you got tickets to sit with your Loyola contingent. Sadly, we actually I was getting in from a flight late on Monday, and I got the email while I was in the air, and it said, oh, sadly, you didn't get tickets. And I was like, oh, okay. Well, I'm only a season ticket for this 1 year. Must be like because I'm a newbie, right? Well, then I read on Twitter that a season ticket holder of 22 seasons didn't get the ticket. So again, in the email, they talk about what they had 200 tickets and 1,000 requests. So I'm not saying it could have been better. I'm just intrigued. Maybe we need to build a new system for within Loyola to understand like, and also, how did 1,000 tickets go? But I don't know. I think that was just an interesting insight to like, wow. And again, the final 4 year we were students. So that was a little different about like student section and everything. And then last year I didn't want to go, but also I heard tickets were just hard because of course COVID. So this was like one of those first years where you and I at least were really paying attention to how tickets were moving. We're graduates. We can't rely on student tickets. So this was an interesting insight for me, I'd say. What about you think, Buck?
Yeah, it just was a bummer, honestly. Like, it's really disappointing, and I don't know who to be disappointed with. You know, like, on one hand, I'm like, oh, man, Loyola, I couldn't get more tickets, right? But, I don't think it's their fault.
Yeah, no.
And then on the other hand, it's like, so am I upset at the NCAA? And it's really easy to be upset with the NCAA just at every turn, honestly, these days, because – People are getting extra years of eligibility that like for no reason, and the people with good reasons don't get it. It's just so I guess I'm upset with the NCAA. Ultimately they probably just want to make more money on the tickets at the stadium. So probably, you know, just another thing about how can they get more money. So that was the first thing that was just kind of a bummer, but I don't know, we kind of worked around it and figured out a way. So we ended up getting tickets just through like Ticketmaster. And pretty good ones too, behind one of the baskets, which, you know, it isn't the best seat in the house, but it's cool. We were still in the 100 section and, close to the action, close to we were on the Ohio State band side. And that was cool. They got a good band. So, you know, it was fun to sit there and, yeah. So I don't know if we do want to keep going through the week and how we,
figure it out. Yeah, absolutely. So then next, so funny enough, I have family connections in Pittsburgh. And so we kind of solidified how we were going to stay, and we, didn't pick the team hotel. I think also was probably going to be packed anyway, but, figured out we were going to drive Thursday afternoon and be getting in there late Thursday night, which we did. Buck here picked me up at around 3:30, I think, and we got on the road and picked up another buddy of mine and got into pretty much our home of Pittsburgh, our kind of headquarters for the next 2 days, around, I think, 11:30, maybe midnight. So really, St. Paddy's Day was over. We didn't really do much drinking. We did a lot of driving, though. So 7 hours, Buck and I. It was fun. I've done that drive quite some time. I think, Buck, you said this was like your longest drive that you've done yourself while driving, I think, right?
Yeah, I think so. I've done a couple of like 5-6 hour drives, or helped out with a longer drive, like a 16-hour drive, but never, this was my longest solo drive, I'm pretty sure. But it wasn't bad. It wasn't bad. You know, we had lots of hope on the way down there. Lots of, good conversation talking about Loyola, talking about how we're going to go and win this game, how, you know, Ohio State's defense is no good and, our defense is great and we're going to hit enough shots. And, it was fun. It was a fun drive. Good company, I guess, makes the drive go easier. So.
So then it was game day, kind of crazy to think, but game day happened. And then, we got to our seats. Like Buck said, we got tickets right behind the Ohio State bench, their band, which again, I thought, I got a little concerned because just their football band always is the highlight reel. So I was expecting the same, but I don't think it really was, but it was still cool. We ended up sitting actually right behind Loyola fans. And even though there were some Ohio State fans, there were also plenty of Loyola fans scattered within. So it didn't feel like we were in a sea of red or anything. So that was also pretty cool. But then the clock struck, 12:15 Eastern, and a Loyola Ramblers hit the court, Buck.
They did. It was, so it was both of our first March Madness games being in the place. And I actually have a funny story to tell. So, before the game happens, you know, we're all nervous and we're trying to get food. I have this thing where I can't eat during the game. I can never eat food during a Loyola game. It's not that I'm going to be sick. I just can't do it. So I'm like, I hadn't eaten anything the whole morning and I knew there was going to be plenty of, beverages to come. So I had to scarf down a couple donuts. Luckily they had like a Dunkin' Donuts Express in the stadium, which I had never even seen before. So we get done with that. I go to the bathroom and I'm, you know, in a different world, just trying to think about the game and how we're going to win. I walk into the bathroom and, I'm like, oh, there's a lot of stalls in here. That's weird. There's no urinal. That's kind of strange, but whatever, you know, it's a stadium. I can use a stall. Maybe they just have only stalls in all the bathrooms. And I walk in further and, there's a couple of women standing on the far other side of the bathroom. And I was like, that's strange. Like they're in the wrong bathroom. That's so silly of them. And then it dawns on me, oh crap. No, I'm in the wrong bathroom. And luckily there was literally one person going to the bathroom and two other women in the bathroom. So I turned around, walked out, and you know, I'm as red as Adam Buckeye red, like, cause I'm embarrassed. And this Loyola fan, this older guy, like probably 60 or so, walks past me and he saw what happened and he starts laughing and he goes, oh, like, what were you going in there for? And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so sorry. I don't know. I couldn't remember the last time that's happened to me where it's just, you know, you feel so silly. It's like, I'm not trying to do anything. I'm just trying to get out of here. And he goes, oh yeah, sure. Like giving me a hard time, but, it's just really silly. So take care of my business and we go and sit down. And, like Lou said, behind the Ohio State bench, and there's a guy on my left, single like Ohio State fan that we were kind of chatting. And he was not very confident in Ohio State either. So we were just kind of chatting about that. And he was actually a nice enough guy. We actually sat around a decent, like, crowd of Ohio State fans. Like, they were very cordial. Nothing wrong about that. Like, you know, there are times we were sitting, or I've been sitting at, like, Arch Madness, and it wasn't the same story. The fans weren't the same level of kind. So that was cool. But, yeah, I mean, getting into the game, tip-off happened. Honestly, a lot of it's a blur. I'm not going to lie. It just felt like, no pun intended also, all felt like a blur. It just felt like we never got into our game. And I kept waiting. I was like, when is this going to happen? I saw Ryan hit his first three, and I was like, oh, great. That's perfect. Ryan's going to be good to go, right? Like, you know, we'll get 10 from him, 12 from him, something like that. We got Chris Knight involved kind of early. He made a layup, like, was their first bucket, and that felt good. I think he even had, like, another bucket not too long after that. I think he did get blocked once and, like, missed a layup, and then he came back and made another shot. I was like, okay, cool. Like, that's a pretty good start. We were playing good defense. You know, EJ Liddell is not really looking all that hot on offense, at least. And then just bricks started piling up. Not even bricks, just missed layups a lot. So a couple missed threes. It just, I don't know. I'm trying to think back on it, and I honestly, like, I wasn't even drinking, and I don't remember much of it, because it was just like, it felt surreal for a couple reasons. Like, first of all, it just felt surreal, like, being there, and also, like, considering we drove 7 hours, and then we wake up the next morning, and we'd go to the stadium right away. So, like, that part of it felt surreal. But it just felt off. They just felt off. I don't even think they were, like, nervous. I think what happened was they felt good coming into the game. And after missing a few shots, that's when the nerves set in. And then it was just they couldn't really shoot their way out of it. And I don't know. I mean, that was kind of my, just for the beginning part of the game, that's how I was feeling. So, Lou, I don't know if you want to talk about the beginning of the game for you. I think you might be muted.
Yeah, I was muted just because I was trying to find a response, and it was just tough, right? I kind of want to just realize that I think, yeah, this was the largest loss that we had in the entire season.
Wow, that's actually, that's pretty surprising.
Yeah, we only lost by 2, of course, to Michigan State. We only lost by 9 to Auburn. And then everything else, 10 to Missouri State, 9 to Drake, and then 7 to Bradley, 7 to Drake, and then 6 to you and I. So it was kind of one of those things that when I realized that, I'm like, but it didn't feel like it because it was such a low scoring game, but that's what it was, right? It was such a really, it was a defensive battle and also a battle within our team. I think that's what I realized right off the start, that it was kind of a battle for us even to score, to find our rhythm, right? I don't think this at all was our pace or rhythm. I think that comes by scoring buckets. We produce a lot of energy off scoring drives and everything. And the thing is, we did that on the defensive side. There were plays, and this is the second half, so I won't do, but like there were so many plays, I think, even in the beginning that it was like, oh, great, great lockdown defense. EJ Liddell, we stopped a shot or, kind of stuff like that. And we just never got into a rhythm, I think. And that's huge, especially in this tournament. Once you get into rhythms, once you go out even on a 6-0 run, that could be the game. Because you just get into a rhythm. So, but early on, though, even though I was worried about our offense, our defense, I was like, EJ Liddell is not scoring. So this is great, right? That's a big thing. Some insight, right? Kyle Young. And I think Kyle Young was probably the biggest impact because he was starting. But Kyle Young was back in their starting lineup for OSU. So that was like a interesting kind of scared. Just worried, I guess, about how that impacted us. So, yeah, it really was just a really slow start from both ends. When I think at one point with 7 minutes left, it was 11-11. So at that point, right, you think, oh, sweet, we have a chance, like this is going to be a close one. And then OSU just goes on a little run. Like I said, they literally actually, I didn't even think about it. They went on a 6-0 run. And that 6-0 run kind of gave them enough space. Yes, we came back, but they got enough space. So it was stuff like that. Even though we were playing tough defense, we weren't helping ourselves on offense. And that's kind of the key summary of the whole game. But even the first half, we were such high in turnovers in the first half. So I think that kind of injured us from getting offense going. And there were some times where even I think throughout the game where we would just, and this might have been in the second half, so I apologize, Buck, but you can correct me, where we just didn't have a great shot after 30 seconds. And it's like, that's kind of a waste of possession.
Mm-hmm.
And so it wasn't clear what the kind of path was. We weren't hitting from three. CK wasn't going to come full. So, and again, I don't think a Loyola team that shoots 26%, from field goal isn't a traditional Loyola team, right? That's something that's, an outlier. So yeah, tough to see. I think a weird fact that I think kind of summarizes my feeling of the game is Braden Norris didn't even get to the free throw line.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm not saying he drives all the time, but Braden Norris, like, he's a dagger from the free throw line. And I just found it interesting that he didn't even get there once. So, but yeah, it was a tough one, right, Buck? Like, there's no way to say it. I think the way I say it, and this is my, I'm not speaking for Buck here, but I think we hurt ourselves more than OSU hurt us.
Yeah.
Like, I didn't even watch the game, but I had people tell me that Charles Barkley said this was a boring game, I think. I think he said, like, it was a slow-paced game, and it was. What team in the NCAA tournament puts up 18 and 23 in the first half? Like, that's a low scoring first half on both sides. So just kind of interesting to hear that tidbit. But again, I think this was a game easily could have won. I don't think OSU really came out overpowering in the second half. I think EJ Liddell did feel more comfortable. And I think that was the fact that they started building a lead. And they had double digit leads at one point and they stuck with it. And I don't even think I think we got it down to 7 maybe at one point, maybe definitely 8. I don't think I ever remember it getting down to 5 in the second half. But Buck, what was it kind of, I think the first half and second half really relate to each other, but was there something that stuck out to you? I really think you spoke to me in person, so I kind of want to talk about the beginning of that second half that you and I spoke about a lot.
Yeah, even so, just right before that, the last play of the first half where we got an offensive rebound. I think Luke shot a jumper, 3, got the offensive rebound. Ryan made a beautiful move to get to the hoop and then tried to finish up and under to evade the block. And, I mean, it's not an easy shot, but he had a layup and missed it. And then, you know, Tom even had a chance to tip it in, and he missed that. And at that point, we're only down 5. Like, a layup there, going down 3. We're down 1 shot. And it just felt like we just couldn't get the momentum at all. Obviously, like you said, Lou, it just comes from, like, making shots. And we didn't make shots. Just like you said, too, like, I don't feel like they really beat us. It just, we didn't make shots. It sucks that, like, that's, you know, there's lots of other good things from this game. None of that matters because all you got to do is win in March Madness. But there was, like, if this was a game in, like, the first half of the season or in our non-con, we could sit here and tell you about how well the defense played and how we kept up with Ohio State and we played good defense against 2 NBA guys. And, like, the fact of the matter is, like, none of that matters, right? And that's kind of what sucks about it.
Oh, absolutely great point. I just want to say, I didn't think about that until you just said it, but yes, if this was a non-conference game, I'd be like, oh, great outing. Like, tough loss, but, like, great outing. But that's not this. I didn't think about that. I found that that's actually a great, 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 great comparison, truly.
Yeah, so it's just, like, it sucks that this is the way they go out, right? And like, you know, Lucas had a great game besides putting the ball in the basket. And I understand that's, like, you know, for a common fan, that's all that matters, right? But, like, he did. He had 6 assists, which I think might have – honestly, it could have been his career high. I have not checked that. But at least, like, it's got to be in his top games this year. 5 rebounds, 3 steals. He had some open shots. He just couldn't hit them. I thought Braden played pretty well, actually, all things considered. He was the only guy that seemed like he was making shots when no one else was. Besides that, Ryan had a few good, he had a good first half. I think all his 8 points came in the first half. And he had a few nice rebounds. I remember him stealing away from the other side. It just was really rough from the other guys. I mean, Ugbach, I love you, man. I respect you. I'm always going to remember you for your Arch Madness championship game. But like this game was just, was he on the court? You know, he was on the court for 33 minutes and it felt like he just wasn't making an impact on either side. And, that's rough. I mean, Chris Knight got blocked a few times. And then Tate also, just didn't see that Tate Hall, like those rebounds and some of those loose balls. I know he dove on the floor a couple times, but, that was kind of rough to see. And Marquise, similar to Lucas, man, he just different kinds of shots, but he had a few good looks and they just weren't going down. But similarly, like he had 5 rebounds and 3 assists. So it just couldn't find a guy to put the ball in the basket, but, I know what you want to talk about the beginning of the second half, but
I think, two things just like with, I think the beginning of the second half nearly sums up the entire game. So I think we can end on that because when we look at the box score at 1, right? So I do think you hear and correct me, played majority of his time on defense on EJ Liddell. Mm-hmm. So I think he did make an impact on the fact that EJ Liddell only put up 16. Now saying like in the first half he had 4. So the second half I think EJ Liddell got more comfortable, but he also was doing moves that you didn't see in the first half. But when you look at the box score, I don't think anyone on our side had a great game. One thing that throws me off is Ahir had no rebounds at all. Now again, is he boxing out? Because you and I have talked about this. I'm like, why does CK not have rebounds? And like CK only had 3 rebounds, okay. But then why is Lucas and Braden have more or the same as him, right? And maybe it's that they're boxing guys out. So I can't recall. That is probably a blur to me, knowing why guys got rebounds more than like Ahir and CK. But that's something that I'm noticing looking at the box score. I'm like, that is weird, and I don't think that really should have happened. But yeah, I don't think, I think Braden shot 38% from field goal, 36 from 3. Not terrible. But to be the leading scorer on the team, that's not great. Usually that's someone who might have been like, I think third or even second. The box score is not pretty. I don't think there's one person to really say. I think it was just collectively, it was just a cold day from field goal. It really was. I think I try to do the math in my head. I'm like, okay, if we made 6 more field goals and 2 were 3s and 4 were field goal or just 2s, and then we made maybe like, what if we made 3 more free throws? Okay, we would have won. And it's like, no matter how you slice and dice it, if we just made more shots, we would have won. That's kind of what it is. I think we were given the opportunity to make shots and we just couldn't finish, right? The interesting thing, one thing I wanted to say, and you know what, I'll save it. I'll go into the start of the second half if I don't mind with Buck, but I really want to ask you this at the end of this. But the start of the second half, I think, sums it up. And Puck and I do feel bad for people who don't realize this, but my buddy was sitting with me who's not from Loyola, but he really wants to see Loyola because he appreciates me having a team and caring for a team. But when Buck and I sit and watch a game and the game isn't going the way we thought and we know things are wrong, we're not people who can really socialize. We're like, that sucks. That was a bad call. Or we're not, why are we doing that play? Why it's just, we're so focused on every little thing. Or like even there were so many, I think there was a charging call a few times that but on both sides, Ohio State, we were like, that's not a charge on Ohio State. And then we were like, ooh, that's not a charge on us. So we were nitpicking almost everything, both good and bad. But the start of the second half, we both turned to each other, and this is what it was. And Bob, correct me, because you really articulated great, but it was like 3 possessions. And I don't know if they're the first 3, but 3 possessions were, what, a steal and two charges or two
steals? Other way.
Okay, so two steals and one charge on OSU. So OSU turned the ball over three times, two steals or two turnovers by steals on us, and then we – and I believe Lucas took the charge.
He did. And also he missed two free throws in there.
So now I'm going to go to the offensive side.
Yeah.
So that was the defensive side. The offensive side is we missed two layups and two free throws. I think that's kind of what it came down. Maybe you could say three layups just because I think Lucas did get the ball up. But again, he got fouled, I believe, or something like that, and that's what it got. I'm trying to get the box. I'm trying to get the play-by-play, to be quite honest with you. But ESPN just really doesn't want me to see the second half.
So here's the offensive possessions to start the
game. Yeah, please.
Start the second half. Lucas turnover. Lucas missed a layup, missed both of his free throws. Then we have Lucas Williams turnover. Lucas Williamson missed layup. Ahir Ugwuk missed three-pointer. And Ryan Schrieger turnover, Chris Knight missed layup, and then finally Braden hits a three from a pass from Marquise Kennedy.
Gotcha. Yeah. So there were actually a lot of things in there that I want to talk about for and I'm gonna go back to this episode and kind of recall it about like personal interesting things that I noticed there that were mistakes. But right now we're just gonna talk about the overall game, and the overall game was like, it reminded me so much of the start of the second half against Missouri State. We were not making any shots just to reiterate. So our Missouri State at home, they went out and we couldn't hit anything. And they were just scoring. It wasn't that they were scoring all consistently. Like, they were turning the ball over. We just couldn't respond. And that's what it felt like, really, for the first, 3.5 minutes, we didn't get a bucket. And then we finally got a bucket. And then we only score, I think, for the first 7 minutes, we only score 5 points.
Yeah.
And it's like, what? And they scored 14 points. So when you go 14-5 run, and then it goes on a little bit more of a run, and it was just, there were so many dominoes that were, threes weren't falling, right? But then there were turnovers from guys spinning in. Guys kind of passing it. I don't think that was necessary, but no matter what, the start of the second half, I think really we both turned to each other and were like, ah, shit, this is feeling. And I forget, did you have a comparison second half start? I said, I forget if you said thing.
I don't remember. No, it was just a focus on that, like, Lucas made three outstanding defensive plays and we had nothing to show for it.
Absolutely. Yeah. And then that's kind of the summary of the game, I think, really, is that it was locked in to an extent. I think, there were mistakes made. Our defense was not 100% perfect, but our defense kept us in a game that was like, okay, defense did it. It's pretty much like in NFL when the defense stops a team on the goal line and they only need a field goal to win the game. And they put the offense out there, and the offense can't even get a 1 yard. And that's what it felt like. It felt like our defense could maybe get a stop, and okay, sweet, let's get a bucket here. And we could just never get over that hump of a bucket. And I think that's just tough. And maybe it was just the fact that guys were just playing so hard on defense that they have the energy. I think there was one play where here we were like, oh, I'm surprised he didn't dunk it. And then we said to each other, I actually don't think he had, like, the energy of the extra step, like he gathered himself just to even get there. And it was just an insight there that we noticed while we were just watching it. But no matter what, I think that is just something that was just tough to watch. Your defensive effort not translate to offense. And I think that's something we said a lot in the conference tournament. And we've said in games previous is that our good defense helps get for great offense. It just translates so well. It's like we've seen it done so well. And it's funny, oddly enough, we didn't see a lot of transition threes. Mm-hmm. I don't recall too many of those being popped. Not to be digging, but especially from Lucas, because he only went 1-for-5 from three. So no matter what, it felt like a different game. Our defense felt consistent, but our offense just felt like it was kind of different wiring and things were just not in place. But fuck, I had one point that is kind of an extension topic. Mm-hmm. And I don't mind it. So what I wanted to talk about was something that kind of went in my head was, this was our first game in nearly 2 weeks.
Yeah.
That won't happen next year. And right. I'm pretty sure that won't happen moving forward with the Loyola Ramblers, but you never know. Do you, and now again, we've done this the last two times we've been in the NCAA tournament. We've waited the same amount of period. Now, granted that we did play on Thursday each time?
I'm pretty sure, yeah.
Or was the Georgia Tech game? No, yeah, Georgia Tech game was Thursday because we played Illinois on the Saturday, right? Mm-hmm. I'm pretty sure.
Yeah.
So yeah, so we played the day before, but we nearly, again, Friday, 2 days later, Sunday would have been the last 2 weeks since we played. And do you think that, in your head, did that come in and be like, oh, that could be a factor or no?
I don't know. I don't think so. I want to lean to say no, just because you could say the same thing about it being more time for guys to rest and all that kind of stuff. I want to say maybe it played into their nerves a little bit more just because you got more time to think about it. Whereas like if you're playing on a Sunday or whatever, your championship Sunday or Saturday even, let's say, and then selection Sunday happens, and then by Monday, you know your opponent, you know where you're going, and it's all about just like prep, right? Like just watching film, having practice, whatever. So maybe the only thing I could see would be like mentally being a little nervous just because you start thinking about it. But yeah, I like the bummer, and this is gets into this question about like I know that this staff prepares these guys, like, you know, as well as any staff in America. We saw that with Porter, and we see it still with Drew. And so I don't think it's preparation that was the issue here. I think the bummer is because of the type of game it was, I think that Loyola got away from or didn't have the opportunity to run certain sets or try different out of bounds plays because they just needed a basket and then the nerves set in. And so you go back to what you know, right? Because you're trying to just get anything to go. And because of that, the new stuff wasn't working, then the old stuff wasn't working, and then they're just all out of sorts. So, Go ahead.
Yeah, I get that. It is actually funny. The one thing that came up to my mind, and it actually had nothing to do, I 100% agree. I think our staff prepares guys. I think we have game plans well done and put together. What I really think it was, and it just something that came, was just the energy off of those three games. To end, like, imagine, I just was like, wow, that energy in each of those conference games was so, like, whoa. Yeah. And, like, I wanted some of that energy. And I took that energy into my work week. And I work at a desk. So I was like, oh, hyped. And it was like, that energy, not saying the guys lose or anything, but it does kind of come back down to a little bit down to earth. And you kind of just like, bring yourself back down, you're that high of being, and it was like, imagine winning on Sunday and then be like, okay, let's do it again in 4 days. And now in some cases that doesn't help, right? You have some teams that might not help. They need the rest because guys played so much because you play those three games. So I can see it either way. It was just something that was like, it was just weird to see. And again, it's so annoying personally that I look back at those three previous games and you're like, that's what got us here. And then you see this game, you're like, oh, where was that? And it was just tough. There's no way to like blame. There's no blame, I think, personally. I think it was guys playing the NCAA tournament and there's expectations and what you need to do to win. And some of those things were met and some of the things that weren't met caused us to lose. So, and again, you're going up against teams who are also the best in their conference, right? Or the best, we're not going against teams that are just like, even like I kind of joke as we're recording the St. Peter's, right? St. Peter's had to win their conference to get there. So they know how to win. So stuff like that, like we're not playing teams that are shocker. I'd see to beat us. I think it was just a shocker that we could have won it and we just didn't. But again, overall, I think the atmosphere was fun. I saw Lucas's mom. And it was like great to see this fans again, the family section was packed. Sister Jean was there. I believe we had again, the arena was more packed. Again, there were empty sections, we think, because the Nova and Delaware fans were late to showing up. But for our first NCAA game in person, I think it was a decent arena. There were just questions, I think, of why we didn't do Indianapolis or Milwaukee just for closer, but that's just me asking for save us on driving. But no matter what, it was fun. OSU fans, to be honest with you, as a football fan, I've never liked them, but not a really bad person to chat around in the seats. So that was kind of odd coming from Valley games. So really interesting. So, but Black Gate was a tough one to end the season on, of course. But our guys got to the NCAA tournament. I think that's a bigger goal than some of us might have realized ending the regular season. So.
Yeah, it was. Just to be there was incredible. And, I don't think, you know, I think it's easier to say, oh, do you think this team was just satisfied being there? And no, I don't. Like I've heard that question a couple times. I've read it on Twitter. Cool. No, this team goes into every single game thinking they're going to win. You know, they asked Ubach earlier, like in the press, day before, 2 days before the game about, Young and Key potentially playing. And he goes, it doesn't matter. Like, we're preparing for them to play and we're going to be ready, like, no matter what. I think this team was prepared and ready to win this game and then continue on. I don't think there's no excuses. There's no, I don't know if there's any explanation other than it just, their shots didn't go in and it, we didn't, you know, the whole season, I don't know that we played a bad game. I mean, like Missouri State at home, you could say that's, you know, was probably our worst game potentially just the way it went. It really wasn't that close and it ended closer than it was. You could say Drake at home was bad too, just because of the team. You know, Drake is, it wasn't all that great. But yeah, I just, you know, I think it's just one of these things where they played darn good the whole entire year, pretty consistent, you know, ups and downs a little bit, but no extremely bad game. And it caught up to them. And on their, what was it, their 32nd game of the year or something, it finally just, there's just one bad game. And if it would have happened in conference play or non-con, we would have been able to probably recover from it and hope that that sort of thing doesn't happen again. But unfortunately, this was the last game of the season. And it's just, it's really tough for me seeing the post game press conference and stuff and, you know, Lucas being so hard on himself and, you know, the coaching staff and Drew, some of the things he said about not playing up to how good they were. And that stuff is really hard to listen to and watch because we all know, I mean, I think any reasonable seasoned Loyola fan, whatever that means now, knows how important these guys were to the team. And I guess before I kind of go off into this sort of thank you to the seniors portion of the episode, do you have any other stuff about the game? It's kind of getting hard for me to talk about, to be honest.
No, I think it was just you touched on a little bit that I want to say is like the post game. It was tough no matter what to watch. And I understand like some of the comments, not buddy, but fans, but Lucas saying he was disappointed. And I don't think anyone was happy with the game, right? We can say that there's blatantly no one on the team is going to be happy that we lost. And yes, I think because of also, I agree with you, because of the experience of a majority of these guys know what winning is like in the NCAA tournament. So of course they wanted to win because they also have been there, especially a lot of the guys from the previous years. So, but what I have to say is, and what I've said to some people is there's sometimes I got to look back and be like, we were the 4 seed going into the conference tournament. And I'm pretty sure majority of the Valley had us out of the tournament and also a lot of commentators or whatever had us out. So I just think the resilience of this team is what this team showed me. When it was needed to get to the next level. And, I think sometimes that just doesn't always transition into the big stage, but I think these guys did great, no matter what. Tough game. It absolutely is. But, the post game stuff of like the guys doing what they need to do, I think they've shown us a lot. And I think it's also a credit to the seniors, so, which I think you wanted to get into.
Yeah, I'll even take your analogy like one step further, or description about like other Valley teams and commentators potentially not thinking we're going to win. We had our own fans replying to us on Twitter.com saying, why is this team no good? Where did the good get bad? They're not going anywhere. Like, we were getting these comments, not a ton of them, but like 10, 15 of them over, like when we lost to Drake at home, and then after the Northern loss as well. Like, you know, why, you know, what happened? Our defense is broken. Our team is broken. Like, this is, you know, it was just, so I just want to take it one step further. Is like, even our own fans weren't believing in our team. Not all of them, but some of them. And, you know, it was just obvious that from the first, you know, the non-con, I think you can divide our season up into like a couple parts, right? Our non-con and then the San Francisco game, right? The first game back was, we just played so great, I think. Consistently, getting contributions from all over the court, that sort of stuff. The beginning of the first conference portion of our season, I think we played well enough to win, some tight games, a little bit of nerves, whatever. And then the second half of our conference season was when we realized that, okay, like, we're not this top 25 team, but we're still pretty darn good, but we're, you know, able to lose, or like we have lost. And so then obviously going into Arch Madness, the guys rekindled what they had at the beginning of the year, proved the doubters wrong, proved the rest of the Missouri Valley Conference wrong. And they played just incredible for 3 days. And so I think we all just kind of thought that's what was going to keep happening. And, yeah, unfortunately it didn't, but I just, yeah, I like your point about how our team really, stepped up when they needed to, and dug deep in order to get those three wins down in St. Louis. When, I think a lot of people, there was just a good amount of good teams. So I think people are just like, oh, they'll probably lose at some point. So, I think you're right, but. Yeah, as for the game, man, like, it was fun to be there. It was fun to see the guys, and see them on that big of a stage. But yeah, unfortunately, the actual basketball on the court was not fun to watch. At least for my heart, my stomach, and then my liver as well afterwards. So yeah, what else you got on the game, or should we just kind of, we'll have an episode where we talk about the seniors, but it's kind of what's on my mind right now. So we can just.
I think it's injustice. We've talked about it, but there's injustice. We didn't give only like say 15 minutes to talk about these guys, especially the impact these guys made by returning and what they've done. Cause kind of crazy enough, I was like, oh wait, Tate was only a transfer for 2 years. No, he's been here for 3 years. Like, some of these guys have evolved into guys that have played majority of their careers in college basketball at Loyola. And with some of the posts today, or I think it was today or yesterday, I saw on Instagram, I really am excited to talk about these guys because I think the way I want to describe these guys is that they continue the consistency of winning at Loyola.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's a group of guys that began the winning at Loyola, and you can't forget those. But it actually is in college, you only get 4 years, or again, COVID, right? But in the pros, guys could be there for 10 years and continue the winning, right? But those guys who step up next after the ones who do it first got to continue the consistency. So that's kind of how I've realized when looking back at this group. And even there's a certain fella, big fella last year who left us that also dons the cap of that. It's just really funny, to think about these seniors. So I'm really excited to talk about them and all the work they've done.
Yeah. Let's start, I guess, with kind of the more recent ones, and then we can work our way back to, the veterans, the Grizzle veterans. And first, you know, just kind of quickly with Ryan Schwieger and Chris Knight, like, couldn't have done this season without you. You know, they each had their moments. They each had their important games, they each had, I don't know, like their ups and downs, and it was just fun to watch them this year. It'll be tough to see them go. We might still get them back, but, you know, we just don't really know at this point. But if this is all we get was the 1 year, happy to have them here, and good luck to them as they continue on. So I don't know if you have any thoughts on those two.
No, I think we'll go into a deeper talk, but yeah, absolutely interesting guys who stay committed, even after coaching change. So I thought that was even something people forget about those two guys. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And then the next ones, I guess the next group, I guess you could say, would be Tate Hall and Keith Clemens. Unless I'm forgetting. No. Yeah. Those two. They actually came in the same year, which is like weird to me, but it, obviously that's what happened.
That is weird to think.
Technically, like, well, Tate was here 1 year earlier because he sat out a year.
Stupid D2 transfer.
Such garbage.
Yes. Sorry.
No. But I feel like they each had a very different path. Like with Keith, he came in and like he was a contributor from day one, and he was he almost single-handedly kept us alive in Arch Madness 1 year, scoring, I think he scored like 26 points or something like that. Just sharpshooter, solid, steady guy, controlled the ball, great point guard. But it was interesting too, because he came in as a JUCO transfer with Jalon Pipkins. And I remember like right away, like reading or seeing like they're good friends or became good friends. And obviously Pipkins transferred, but Keith stayed. He averaged over 10 points his first year at Loyola. And then, his second year, 7.5. And then this year was, only 2.5. And one of these days I'd like to find out what happened, but it's also one of those things where we don't need to know. Like it just feels like there's more to the story of Keith Clemens about what happened this year, whether he was more hurt or if he just, I don't know. Cause it just feels like if he was healthy, he would have been able to play more. But either way, I'm just happy to have him here. He seems like just the stand up guy. He won the, award at Arch Madness for having the highest grade point average on the championship team, which is outstanding, and that's a great achievement. I'm glad he got his moment. Just 3 years is great to have him here. And then for Tate Hall, man, he's up there. He's one of the great Loyola players for sure, in a lot of different ways. Coming in, his first year being second team all conference, I want to say, and second leading scorer on that team that won the conference, right? They tied for the conference, and went to the
NFL. Yeah. Or, no, sorry, with Drake. Sorry, we tied it with Drake. We never tied it with.
Right. And he just, you know, he's a gamer, man. He just tough. To see him evolve over the 3 years too, like playing very different roles. And then this year, I just thought he bulked up a bunch and took on this different role of like, I want to be, you know, a scorer or, well, not even, I want to be a rebounder. I want to be, a loose ball type guy. And then a scorer like third, that wasn't his priority. And he played his way into more minutes throughout the year and he deserved every single one of them. But him playing big and playing out of position, I think at times was super key to our team, and, just great to have him here. I hope he's around. I could see him getting into coaching. He just seems like the type of guy to be a good fit for that. So, I don't know. I'm kind of just stumbling over my words here, but Tate was definitely one of my favorite Ramblers ever, just over the years to watch him grow and change. And, he obviously just cares about winning. I mean, all these guys do, but it was obvious that he truly just wanted to win no matter what it took from him. So, I don't know what you got on Tate and Keith.
Yeah. Keith and Tate, interesting guys. I think they both are a perfect way to group them because they've intersected over each other so much. Because 1 year Tate is starting, 1 year, yeah. 1 year is Keith starting, then Tate's starting, and then they just both back and forth. And last year we saw Tate step back from starting off the bench and Keith stepped up. So it was just the fact that these two guys actually, I think, intertwined a lot together, and you saw no resilience from them. I guess you did see them. My thing is that you saw these guys not quit, and that's the thing. You really saw the guys, like, Tate always on the ground, always grinding. And then Keith, I'll never forget his conference game against Drake. Always head up, always strong. So two guys who transferred and transferred into the program right after the Final Four run, right? So they saw something that – or believed in something, because they probably – pretty sure they committed before we went to the Final Four. So
Tate definitely did.
Tate definitely did, I guess – because Keith was a JUCO transfer, so it could have been later. But, yeah, I think those are the biggest things, that those guys, even though their kind of roles changed so much, they never wanted to stray away from an opportunity that they had with Loyola. And especially with a coaching change, they were like, no, we still want to stay. And I think that just shows you the great kind of effect they had and what the program had on them.
Yeah, next guy, just kind of quickly, was Will Alcock. Mm-hmm. Will, just an upstanding person, great bench guy. Really saw him take on a little bit more responsibility and like coaching, you know, smaller coaching things on the bench. I think he joked that he always, he was the whiteboard guy this year. He just fun guy to follow, an interesting story. And, it was really nice to be able to talk to Mr. Alcock and get and learn a little bit more about him. So. Yeah, Will was a great dude.
Will the victory scar. That's what Will is, no matter what. I think just a frustrating thing I saw, Will got in at the NCAA tournament game and he missed the layup and he got frustrated. And out of all things, I was like, Will should not be frustrated, but the fact that he cared that much and he wanted to be, I think that just showed you from him making threes, it's unbelievable what impact I think he's had on the bench. But also to the other guys. And then, of course, just keeping – he cares so much about Loyola that he wants to talk have a podcast with a former teammate of his and just talk about that and other things. So I think that's just cool that he's made such an impact and Loyola's made an impact on him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure. Victory Scar, that's how we'll always remember him. Second to last guy, Aguirre Ubach. It's weird that we're going to have a team without him on it, right? Like it's – yeah, he was a part of the Final Four team. You know, he was transferring in, he was redshirting. And then, you know, four years of him actually playing, mostly starting. I think we'll get his stats for when we actually talk about in depth, but, probably top 5 or 10 in Loyola history for starts. He's also evolved over the 4 years, right? Like it's just
so involved. Yeah.
Been fun to see him. It's just, he's, for me, it's just going to be weird to see a team without him on it. Like that's the thing that's going to be the most strange for me and the most out, like, you know, out in front. His defense has been outstanding. I feel like this year we got to know a little bit more about his personality. There was more like articles written about him. He got some more time like to talk during press conferences. And it just felt like, I don't know. That was one of my favorite things, getting to know him a little bit more. It felt like he was kind of a goofier, like, guy than I had expected, or like more lighthearted, I guess you could say. And just some of the interviews and stuff. But, yeah, it's going to be just damn weird having a team without him on it. It's been fun watching him. I miss his dunks. I miss his blocks. I miss his great rebounds. And his improved 3-point shot. So. Yeah, he's been just a lot of fun to watch for 4 years.
What you got? I think that what I got is a quick fun is that NIT Aguirre Ubach, I didn't think I'd ever see again. Mm-hmm. And NIT Aguirre Ubach, I think, put up like, what, 21 maybe? I feel
like I had a tweet about it at some time. I think it was like 18.
18, but it felt like it could have been 30 because I just didn't ever expect that from him. And all of a sudden, I saw probably one of the most improved each year players I've seen at Loyola in recent years. Just from the level of improvement each year. Like, yes, of course, Cam improved from being a freshman Cam to the All-American Cam. That absolutely is an improvement. I mean, but I think just coming from here each year, it was like, oh, wow, he improved his defense. oh wow, I want him to shoot threes. I am okay with that. So there are so many things that I think I saw him improve, and I was like, I'm loving it. I'm loving it. And then now you're absolutely right. But it's getting taken away from me. And I'm like, no. I keep going. So, nothing but the best. Yeah, I think this year saw a different type of a year, and I think that was great. And then crazy to think I found it, really, he played 4 years here, even though he played his freshman year at New Mexico. He was able to get 4 years with that extra year. So again, a 4 year player and great player to, I think, see and grow at Loyola.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I feel like he would have been one of the guys that, like, if Loyola made a run, even to the second weekend, he would have, you know, would have been probably a lot because of him. And it would have been one of those guys that, like, the whole country gets to know more about. And I feel like we kind of missed out on that opportunity. But luckily we had him here for 4 years and, or five, I guess, and we got to know him. So it was cool having him here. I'm sure we'll see him around. I hope we see him around at Gentile, and yeah, best of luck for him going forward. Last guy, Lucas. Obviously, there's nothing we can say that's going to be good enough as a send-off, as a goodbye or whatever. I think he's the best to do it since for Loyola since Jerry Harkness. You know, he's not, I'm not going to sit here and try to convince you that he's a better player than Cameron Krutwig, because Cam was an All-American, but I think he's just one of the best people to do it. And I'll let you explain your nickname here in a minute, but I won't take that shine from you. But, yeah, it's just been a pleasure and joy and, I don't know, all the other niceties you could say about him to watch him be a Loyola Chicago Rambler and all that, that, you know, human being, student, basketball player, whatever. He's just another player. I mean, I feel like we said this about everyone, but just how much he's evolved as a player this year. We really talked about, I think in the off season, how much of more of an impact Lucas had to make on games if this team wanted to make it to March Madness. And he did that. I mean, he went from averaging 8.8 points last year to being the leading scorer, 13.7. And he averages a whole another assist. He went from 2 to 3, more rebounds. And I think he shot a better percentage. Yeah, 39% from 3. So it's just all these things right on the court that we could talk about, and memories and shots. That shot against Drake in Arch Madness, step back 3 over Terrell Murphy is always going to live in my head. The steal against Miami, obviously that's a big one. And there's plenty others. How he played against Georgia Tech in the first round of March Madness last year. So, I hope it's his hometown. I hope he's around. I wish him the best. I think he has a really bright future as a professional basketball player, wherever that might be. Yeah, one of the best to ever do it. He's the standard, and it's just been awesome watching him play. So, Lou, what do you got about our guy Lucas Williamson?
I think it was more of a how do you sum up Lucas Williamson? And I think we'll do proper send offs and deep dives, but what I think I wanted to let listeners know now is what I think could be properly done or given to Lucas, is just like Mr. Loyola. I think that's a proper fitting name. And first off, Mr. Loyola has nothing to do with only playing or scoring. It has just something to do with embodying Loyola, both on court and off court. There are probably also other students and student athletes who do amazing things off the court. I'm not saying he's the only one. I just think Lucas has made such an impact to the community and his own community of players, and also players of color, and that he wants to tell a story. Even saw interim or assistant coach, Phil Martelli, I think, at Michigan, former St. Joe's. He talked about watching the movie, and I saw that the other day, and I was like, Lucas is helping touch. Now, it's not his only story, but he's helping touch and bring to light so many things. And I think having a young, fresh face on certain topics is really great. But the fact that it's a Loyola topic is even crazier, that he's able to bring so many things he loves together. So there's the court. What he's done on the court is undeniable, awesome. It's crazy to think he was a freshman, right, on the Final Four team. And then last year, he himself also accomplished a win against what the number one seed, Illinois, right, to get to the Sweet 16. So accomplishment on the court, I think, have always been great. He's up there with the winningest player in Loyola history, I think. He's definitely the most games in Loyola history. So I think he's in the history books for a lot of things. And then I do believe he will be remembered on Loyola's campus for a lot of things. So Mr. Loyola. And then I think not only professionally in sports, but I think Lucas embodies a lot of things that are Chicago, that I think Mr. Loyola wouldn't be the only nickname I will see him bear in his future. So, but yeah, no, it's a pleasure to have known a lot of these, or not know, but see these seniors and also get to know them, because there's so much more we can talk about and we will talk about. But just to tie it into the whole effort of this season, I think is also in big part to these seniors, because majority of them all played the season and impacted it throughout.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they did. And it's just been so much fun to watch them play. And it feels different than last year. And I've been trying to, like, put my finger on why it feels so different. I was just like, it felt more heartbreaking last year. Maybe that's just because the expectations were a little bit higher, but this team has just been a joy to watch and enjoy. And maybe it just feels like a proper ending. I don't know, because we were able to be there, but like with the final or the Sweet 16 year, couldn't go to a single game. Maybe that's what it is. But either way, the seniors have been so much fun to watch and to be a part of the program. And we're excited to see where their futures go. And I know that they all have said really great things about the young guns of Loyola. And I know they're hopeful that they're going to take the crown or take the torch. And I think we are too. So I think we got a lot to look forward to, for our Loyola Ramblers. I don't know. That's kind of all I think we got. Lou, do you have any last thoughts, or how do you want to talk about the team for the last time?
It's weird to talk about this team. Not only when you said it here, I was like, yeah, we won't have any here next year. We won't have one of a lot of guys next year. And I think that's the tough thing. However, this team did things that I think surprised me, disappointed me, but ultimately got the job done when needed, I think, to push this team forward. And again, like I said, I think this team, especially these guys leaving, were that next iteration of players that had to continue winning. And I think now Loyola has just had a lot of players be able to set standards that can be carried on by hopefully other future rosters. So it's definitely exciting to talk about them. Sad to say this will be the last time we'll be talking about any of their on-court appearances in a Loyola Ramble uniform. But I definitely think we will hopefully be talking about them and their impact to Loyola, later in their lives.
Yeah. I think that's going to do it. We really enjoy having all you listen to us talk about the team. Obviously, like, our main kind of content is talking about the games and the previews and all that kind of stuff. We still are planning to have kind of a lot of content throughout the summer, at least the first couple months. We still are. We got some stuff lined up. We're going to be improving our podcast. We're going to be improving the sound quality. That's kind of one of the things that you hopefully will hear probably next week, honestly, or maybe in the following week. I just want to let you all know that, like, that it doesn't go unappreciated that you guys listen in, just from a sheer community, like Aspect Twitter, and the podcast. We know that, like, there's more of you now than there was, ever. And we don't take that lightly, and we just really enjoy hanging out with you all for an hour, once a week, talking Loyola Hoops. We will be writing about Loyola Hoops. There should be an article out this week, that will talk about the future of the team. And just keep on the lookout on our Twitter, and our socials. We'll probably at some point have, tweet out or talk about what content is to come. We kind of spend the 14 hours in a car talking about where Podcast 63 goes from here. and how we expand and reach more people and also provide you with more content in different ways. So that's all we got. So thank you all for listening. And always remember, never forget, go Blairs.